emergency.
Yes, okay. I have a client that came in, the client of mine, he hired me yesterday, and the same attorney, he just came in, and then right now he's going to he has a child with him, his daughter. He left my office, he came out there with a Bible, and started talking to me and saying that I was the creator, I was God, and then he wanted me to read the Bible.
The officers on the scene did a fabulous job. Again, he went down. He was trying to locate the child. The child was thrown about 60 feet into the water. So he also was able to locate there was a ladder on the side of the bridge. So he went down. He was trying to locate the child. Echo College put their boat right in the water. They found it.
Good morning. It's time for the Morning Edge here on WWPR 1490 AM. Heard Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. I'm Henry Rains. Here's Augie.
Well, is it a good morning, Tampa Bay? Is it really a good morning? What words, what deeds, and all in the name of God. God help us. In any event, we have a tragedy right in this good old Tampa Bay. We have that topic. We've got some other topics that will come up. The failure of Medicaid in the state of Florida, and why the care or the lack of care of the people that live here. The same-sex marriage decisions in court and so on, these are topics I think that we can talk about further, but this the death of this five-year-old child and the circumstances around it and the safety net that has been shredded and left open and she fell through a hole. That's what we've got, Henry.
Well, that's right, and you know, I liked it much more when we had these Tampa Bay Center of the Universe stories, and it was like the Flag House. Yeah, these are not the ones we want to be the center of the universe for, the media universe. And we do have a guest with us in the studio today, and he is friend, sponsor, partner in Callan's Little Delgado. Melton Little is joining us after quite a hiatus from the microphone here. Good morning, Mountain.
Good morning, Mountain. Good morning, Henry. Good morning, Augie.
And he's here. He thought he was coming here to because, of course, he practices family law among other aspects
well, you know,
of the law.
That's so applicable here, though.
Yes, but he thought he was going to get to talk about, you know, somewhat a happy story. You know, the equality of marriage, gay marriage, same-sex marriage, and here we bring him into this. But that's sort of what you step into on talk radio.
One tragedy at a time.
Well, you know, years ago when I saw I predicted a lot of the debt that Reagan would bring upon this country and the consequences socially. I was driving, leaving Illinois to come south, and the wind was blowing out of the north, and the day after Thanksgiving, and this car passed me, and racing by, and then a police officer's car passed me, and then I caught up with them going south on I-55. And the police officer was standing next to his car with his flashlight. I know this probably doesn't sound like it has anything to do with what we're dealing with today, but it does. And inside the car was someone else, not the police officer. His cap blew off his head, and the wind is blowing. He's smashing his own window, or trying to get back into the police car. The man he arrested had taken over his car and then took off in the police car. This went on for quite a while ahead of us, and then finally we left it behind. And I didn't know what happened until much later. The story came out that this is a family matter, a fight between a husband and a wife. He'd lost his job. The circumstances in his life had collapsed, and he ended up doing this wild, bizarre stuff. The arrest of this man and the incarceration of this man happened in a muddy cornfield nearby. And it's all about the same sort of thing that happened to this child.
Well, if you haven't heard, the father of a five-year-old girl pulled his daughter from the back seat of his car and then threw her off the approach through the Sunshine Skyway Bridge into the bay about 60 feet below, police said Thursday. It wasn't clear why 25-year-old John Nicholas Johnchuk threw his daughter or whether or not she was alive at the time, though an officer who witnessed it said he thought he heard the child scream, but he wasn't sure. The police records said John Cutt was separated from Phoebe's mother, and the two had a rocky relationship, with John Cutt trying to get a restraining order again against her as recently as last month. John Chuck had custody of Phoebe. They lived with his father in Tampa. Just after midnight, police saw John Chuck's PT Cruiser speeding toward the bridge at 100 miles an hour. By the time the officer caught up with him, John Chuck had pulled over near the bridge. John Chuck got out, started towards the officer, who pulled his weapon, then went around to the passenger side of his car, got Phoebe out from the back of the seat, and tossed her over the bridge railing. We have more details, but we don't necessarily need to read them to you right now.
There was a hesitation. He stood by the rail, held her, cradled her, and then said she was God, and then tossed her over.
That's the latest statement on that. Well, we will play you the audio of the 911 call, because there is a big issue about the Department of Children and Families. Secretary Holloway of that organization, department, has already announced a change in how they handle psychotic incident calls. But we'll tell you about that after we play the 911 call. I think one of the most disturbing things, just the whole story is disturbing, but what brings it home is there's hardly one of us who haven't driven over that bridge.
Oh, yeah.
On St. Pete. It's that little bridge that you go to before you approach the toll bridge.
Right.
I mean, the toll gate on the north side of the bridge. And you think about, it's not that far. It's not like when those times, if you've lived here a long time, you go over the Sunshine Skyway and there's a car parked at the top and you know what happened to the driver of that, right, because people are looking over the side. That's the bridge that beforehand that, you know, you think, wow, a few seconds could have saved her. You know, it just, you know, we don't know the state she was in when she came out of the car, but 60 feet survivable into the water.
Yeah.
Melton, when did you first hear about the story?
I heard about it yesterday morning. Came through on my phone, you know, like everybody else, or my wife's phone, and it's very disturbing. I mean, it's one of those stories you read and then you try and put out of your head the rest of the day.
Do you have children?
I do.
How many?
I have three.
What are their ages?
So 22, 12, and 9.
You have twins?
No, 12 and 9 and 22. One older.
I thought you said 22 twice.
No.
Oh.
Just one, thank God.
He didn't have that many wrinkles on that forehead yet.
Just one.
How old was the youngest?
9.
9. So you can remember when that one was 5.
I can relate.
Yeah, so this touches so many hearts in this situation of the loss.
Been a number of tragedies with children recently, and they're all just gut-wrenching.
Yeah. And without getting into the same-sex marriage thing, it is about marriage and about creating families and the way you do that or uncreate them or just destroy them in this situation. They were destroyed for some time in this family circumstance.
It's a question, you know, of where the taxpayers want to put their money and where government decides that they want to make the cuts. And if you have children and families in distress, as you were talking about before we went on the radio, Augie, I mean, it's a question of how much funding do you want to dedicate to that, how much amount of resources do you want to be able to spend, and how do you best utilize those resources to prevent tragedies like this from happening.
Do we invest in people or do we invest in what? That's the question mark. And how do we do that? Do we education, all of the rest, you know, all of the above? Can we protect people? And we used to have a mental health system, which we basically is an incarceration system. About 25 or more percent of people that are incarcerated are mentally ill. And they're put in the hole and they're dealt with in the most ridiculous ways because our system is ridiculous.
Well, the tendency seems to be that when things like this happen, the majority of society as a whole, in my opinion, just takes the position, well, this is just one crazy guy. The guy, and obviously he's not in his right mind. No one in their right mind would even conceive of harming their own child. You know, but this is just one crazy guy, and you know we can't do anything about one crazy person. And you know, and then you'll wait a few months or a year, and it'll be the next crazy person.
Well, how about 400 and some odd people? That was the Miami Herald's report in conjunction with the Tampa Bay Times about the failures of DCF to protect children. Over 400 deaths that they investigated in that report.
Right, and that's exactly my point. I mean, when you see it, when they take that position that it's just one child, it really is more than just the one child. It's a systematic failure, and it's a question of an investment of dollars. I mean, you know, I've worked with DCF over the years, and you know, many of these DCF workers are very competent, very caring, concerned professionals who go about their job. But when their caseloads exceed any possible, you know, human boundaries of accomplishing any of the basic tasks they need to accomplish, then they have to deal with putting out fires every day, and they can't deal with prevention, they can't deal with investigation, and it makes it very difficult. And it's, again, it's just a question, it's a question for the state of Florida and the voters of the state of Florida on where they want to put their dollars, and if they want to continue to, you know, follow the directions of this governor who cut significant mental health funding, and who made cuts across social organizations and shrugged their shoulders and chalk it up to some one crazy guy, then that's going to keep happening, and we're going to keep reading these stories, and it's tragic, and it's more and more tragic every time you read it.
You're hearing the voice of Melton Little, attorney. We have a caller on the phone. We want to hear what you think at 941-745-1490. Let's go to Pat on the line. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Pat.
Good morning. My name's Terry.
Oh.
My father was a friend of yours, and we've had experience, my whole family, with the Child Protective Services in Florida, unfortunately. And I tell you, one of the big problems we saw was there are no grandparents' rights in Florida. That would help children in need.
That's an interesting point. The state dumps things on the family so much, yet they don't give that proviso that the older portion of the family can come in. And is that really true? Is that where is that?
The grandparents' rights in the state of Florida used to exist. They were by statute. There were six or seven different parts of the statute that permitted and allowed grandparents to have visitation rights. Every one of those parts of the statute were ruled to be an unconstitutional infringement on the fundamental right of the family. In other words, there's a fundamental right of a father and a mother to raise their child without interference from any outside third persons, whether those third persons be aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, or in this particular case, grandparents. So the grandparental rights statute that allowed grandparents visitation with their grandchildren, each provision of that was stricken as being unconstitutional. Now, that doesn't prevent grandparents from participating in the DCF process as a relative placement. If they qualify and they're a relative placement and DCF approves them, they'll place the grandchild with that particular grandparent. But once the parent completes the case plan, or once the parent finishes what is required of them by DCF and the juvenile judge, that child is returned back to the parent, and even though that child may have now developed a significant relationship with that grandmother or grandfather, that grandparent now no longer has that right any longer to visit with the child. So you kind of lose a little bit of protection there. But you know, it does tie sort of into the same-sex marriage issue, because it's a fundamental right. The right to raise your children, just like the right to marry, have been determined by the United States Supreme Court to be fundamental rights in the United States.
Are we going to start certifying?
What about the rights of the children? I mean, the children should have a right to family, extended family, people that care about them. I mean, especially grandparents. Who have had custody of the children. You know, I mean, that's not right. And how are the grandparents supposed to be involved in that system when, if it's a juvenile, they can't even be notified of any court cases or anything except by the parents? And if the parent is the problem, which was in our case, the parent's not going to notify you. I mean, I've got that going on right now, and the only reason I have any inkling of what's going on is because they moved to Indiana, and Indiana does have grandparents' rights. And I have to really tread very gently because I'm afraid that their right could be taken away from me because they'll think that I'm trying to interfere. In the meantime, I'm just trying to protect again. And Florida's big problem is, and I suspect it's got a lot to do with funding, lack of funding, is they're so hell-bent on reunification no matter what the cost.
Terry.
I mean, a parent can come up on dirty on a drug test, had been missing for a year, legally listed as a missing person, and soon as they come back, we're going to work towards reunification, no matter what.
Yeah, Terry.
Terry, I just want to point out something to longtime listeners, because you are related to the late Jim in Bradenton, aren't you?
I'm sorry?
Aren't you related to a longtime caller of 1490 who's passed, Jim in Bradenton?
Yes.
Okay, and I want to point out to Melton, years ago when you were on this show, we received a call from, that was your father?
Yes.
Yeah, from Jim in Bradenton, and he spoke to you directly about this problem years ago. Do you remember that call, Melton?
Vaguely.
Yeah.
I do.
So, you know, there's a continuity in this station that we
just does not go
have
away.
An extended family.
Well, what we're doing this morning and what you're doing and what I'm doing is trying to have people like Mel come in here and let us know what we can or cannot do legally and advise people accordingly. And the Terry's complaint, I think, is one that goes to why do some states have the rules and others not? I mean, the states' rights nonsense is why we have the problems we have in this country. There's no consistency from border to border. Things change.
I don't know if you want Washington dictating it either.
I can't speak to what Indiana or Illinois or any other state do. I just can tell you that the Florida Supreme Court determined that it was an infringement on the fundamental right of family, and they struck the grandparental visitation provisions. There is a provision in the statute that allows for custody by an extended family member. That's only in circumstances, however, where neither parent is fit, and the child has resided with that relative for a certain period of time. I believe it's 6 months, and you can move for custody of that child under the statute. But there again, as Terry's saying, once the parent comes back into court and proves that they're a fit parent, not even necessarily that it's in the best interest of the child that the child go live with the parent again, just that the parent is now fit, then the parent receives their child back.
That's a low bar, then, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's a very low bar. Extremely low.
All you have to do is show that you're fit to take care of your child, not that it's in your child's best
interest. Terry, do you want to wrap up, and what else is on your mind to leave the audience with?
Well, like I said, you know, if there's something going on and there's court dates and everything, you know, the parent, how is the grandparent supposed to know? You know, they're not notifying them. I mean, right now I've got a situation back in Indiana now where the oldest grandson who does not want to live there, he's 13 years old, and she's ready to put him in a detention center rather than have him go live with the extended family. And, they won't let me know if there's a court date or anything, but they say that they will work with getting custody, giving custody of the child to extended family members, if there is extended family, but how are they going to know? Because, and the child has a right to a lawyer if the judge allows it. You know, it's crazy. These children's rights are not protected at all. They're really low class, rights for these poor kids.
Thank you, Terry.
Melton, this...
let me just quickly say, and we want to hear from you also with your story, 941-745-1490, 941-745-1490.
Yeah, please call in and give us your circumstances that you're aware of or party to or whatever.
I think Terry certainly helped us get some more information out there that we might not have been on our...
She's confronted with being a grandparent, wanting to help her grandchild and
but her parent was the grandparent.
Well,
she was the brother, sister. But anyway,
That's the point. And the other thing I'm speaking to is that are we going to have to start certifying what is a parent? I mean, you're going to marry people. You can put together a contract and a union and legal consequences and so forth. We certify every damn thing in this state? But we come along with parenthood, which is a huge burden to the society when it all falls apart. Melton, what do you think?
I don't think there's any test that they give you before you become a parent.
I'm not saying what they currently do, but I'm just asking the question, should there be some way, some means? You've been at this experientially, so what are your thoughts?
I wouldn't... know of any way that you would be able to ever accurately certify whether somebody would be a reasonable parent or not a reasonable parent. Certainly the right to procreate and the right to have a family is clearly in the United States a fundamental right. I mean, you know, we're not, you know, China restricted the right of family, you know, just to draw a comparison, you know, when the Chinese said, you know, you're limited to one
child. Yeah.
Right. But, you know, in the United States, under our Constitution, we have certain inalienable rights, certain rights that the courts have determined to be a fundamental right. And one of the fundamental rights you have is the fundamental right to have children, the fundamental right to raise those children. The Florida Supreme Court has determined that you have a fundamental right to not have your rights infringed upon by third parties who are not the parents of those children. And there is some sense to that. I mean, you know, for example, you know, grandmother wants the child to go to St. Joseph's and mom wants the child to go to, you know, Willis Elementary. I mean, who wins that battle? You know, where do you draw the line as to where the rights of the grandparent and the rights of the parent separate? And that, I think, was what the Florida Supreme Court was wrestling with. And essentially they said, look, the right to raise your child as a mother and a father, whether you're in an intact family or not, you're still the parents of those children, is a fundamental right. And we can't allow any infringement on that, whether it be grandparents or any other.
So what you're saying is the court cannot step in and protect this child.
The court could step in and protect the child if there was a complaint to the Department of Children and Families that the child was either abused, abandoned, or neglected. And that complaint can be filed not only by law enforcement or the Department of Children and Families, but a private citizen can file a complaint. A private citizen can file a dependency petition. You know, you can file a dependency petition and allege whether the state of Florida agrees with you or not that your child or your a child in your neighborhood or a grandchild or any other child with whom you're aware is dependent upon the state of Florida, and you're entitled to do that as a private citizen. There's no restriction from you.
Let's take it back to the more acute situation that happened with the tragedy of Phoebe Johnchuk, and one of the things Pinellas Pasco Public Defender Bob Dillinger points out is that the Johnchuk's lawyer called 911 and the DCF but could not get action. They confirmed that someone called the hotline at 2:45 on Wednesday afternoon to warn about Johnchuk, said he was driving all over town in his pajamas Wednesday. Has anybody ever come into your office in their pajamas? Well, would disturb you if they did.
Not that I've walked out in that way.
Seemed depressed and delusional. However, the caller did not report any specific threats. DCF did consider reporting out to prompt an investigation. The Hillsborough Sheriff's Child Protective Investigative Division has investigated them before. And then late Thursday, DCF Secretary Mike Carroll said the department will change its hotline protocol to require a visit from an investigator when a child is believed to be in the care of someone having a psychotic episode, which brings that whole interplay between the caller and the 911 dispatcher to decide if it's a psychotic episode. Quote, we have to do more for children like Phoebe who depend on us to protect them. Well, this is what was actually said, and perhaps everyone would have an idea how the response should be to this.
Okay, I have a client that came in at the time of mine. He hired me yesterday. I'm a female attorney. He just came in, and then right now he's going to. He has a child with him, his daughter. He left my office. He came out there with a Bible and started talking to me and saying that I was the creator, I was God, and then he wanted me to read the Bible to him. I said, I can't, it's in Swedish, and he started being really, I mean, he's nuts.
What?
And did
you
say
he assaulted you?
No, he didn't. But what I'm saying is he's out of his mind, and he has a minor child with him driving to a church now, and I should have kept the child, and he was saying things like, I was supposed to file his paperwork today for a case. He's like, well, don't file the paperwork, it's not going to matter anymore. And then he wanted me to take him to the church, and then he wanted to leave the child here, and I should have kept the child, but now he's left with the child.
Okay, did he make statements like he wanted to harm himself?
No, well, he keeps saying things like that he said that, he keeps saying that I was he keeps saying that I was God, and I keep saying I wasn't, and he said that he needed to go to church to get baptized now, and that he not to file anything because things are not going to matter anymore, and he wanted to leave the child here, and then he didn't want to drive, and then he wanted to drive, so I don't know if he's on drugs.
How long ago did he leave?
He's on his way.
Yeah, this is the whole thing. The child's concern, the people in the DCF hand tied, or something's wrong here. I mean,
I don't think 4 hours is, you know, for a psychotic episode, 4 hours is the bar.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, that's what the new rule is.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's what he said. That's the reaction now, is they've changed their protocol. So if it's, quote, a psychotic episode, they have to be investigated within 4 hours. Well, they sent the Pinellas Sheriff's Department went to the guy, and the guy convinced him, you know, he didn't say the trigger words, that he was going to harm himself or someone else, even though he called the child God.
Yeah. But the mother was accused, and he got custody, and he put the accusation onto her, and it sounds, was that the mother, by the way?
No, that was the attorney.
What a courageous call by the lawyer, actually.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
She's really, stretching the ethics rules. Because she has attorney-client privilege with this individual, and her primary goal is a representation of her client, and she would only make that call if she was absolutely certain that the child was in great danger or great harm. So what a courageous call by the lawyer.
Well, that's something that I hadn't considered, but I think that's the point. When you realize, I mean, I've witnessed some things in the past where this woman was damaging her child, and I rented to her. And I called DCF. I called the sheriff's department. They called DCF, and they took the child from her just some years ago.
What do you do when you feel something's an immediate problem, whether it's a family member, or your neighbor, whether it involves a minor child or not?
Well, you make the call like this lawyer did, but
how does it play out?
Then at that point, you know, you don't really have any additional. We don't have any more power than you or Augie as attorneys. I mean, we can make the call to DCF, which this lawyer did. And I have had situations where I've had people that have threatened to do harm to themselves or others, and in those circumstances, you're essentially required to make some call, you know, to someone, either to have them Baker acted if they're a threat to themselves or others, or, you know, to have some type of an investigation.
But how long can they be held?
3 days.
3 days?
72
hours.
What's
the criteria for actually getting them?
That they're a harm to themselves or someone else.
And so the cop gets there, no, I'm not, I don't want to hurt anybody, I'm just a little upset.
He can still Baker Act them, it's the law enforcement.
What is the interpretation beyond an explicit saying you're going to harm yourself or someone else?
Well, you're getting a little far afield from what I do, but my understanding over the 30 years I've been practicing law is if you're presenting a danger to yourself or someone else, and that is in the officer's opinion, the officer has the right to have you Baker acted.
In the eyes of the officer.
Correct.
Well, that's a pretty safe, for 72 hours, that's a fairly safe decision.
Well, and then you have to be psychiatrically evaluated, and then you have the right, you know, to have that psychologist come in and explain to the court whether you're now, you know, free to go, whether you need additional treatment, whether you need to continue to be held because you continue to be a threat to yourself or others, those types of things.
Well, let's put ourselves in the shoes of the officer, though. If he makes that call, and probably the guy, whoever the man or woman is going to lose their job, they probably have to go to work in the next 72 hours.
Yeah, what about that, Melton?
Well, I mean, that's a difficult call to make. I mean, I do think it's an appropriate response from DCF to shorten the time from the usual 24-hour investigation period to the 4-hour when they're talking about a psychotic episode. I think that's a reasonable change in policy. Now, whether or not that becomes an unfunded change in policy or whether or not it becomes a funded change in policy remains to be seen in this next legislative session, because you're now asking these DCF workers who are already overloaded with cases, who are already appearing in court with cases that they are participants in or supervisors over, to drop everything they're doing and go investigate some type of a psychotic episode.
Wow.
Or you're asking law enforcement to do the same thing. You're asking them to treat it on an emergent basis, and you're not going to have enough officers or enough DCF workers to accomplish that. And then you're going to start getting into questions of how do we classify it as a psychotic episode or not. I mean, what is we're going to have some basic criteria to establish when it isn't a psychotic episode. You know, if I tell my lawyer I think she's God, and you know, I'm going to kill myself and my
really
child.
She's just hot.
You know, I mean, Right. You know, how do you classify that?
What you're basically saying is if the officer makes that decision, he gets drug into court and has to say why he, what makes him such an expert to do such
a
thing.
Well, he has to be, obviously, either the officer or the investigator has to have some rational basis and has to be able to defend the decisions that they make. I mean, in that circumstance, when you have an attorney like that call, obviously that's a psychotic episode. I mean, there's no way that this lawyer makes that call, because it sounds like it sounds from her voice that she's a relatively young attorney.
And it should also be put on the dispatchers, besides the list of questions, did he say he was going to hurt himself? You know, do you think he's having a psychotic episode would be a reasonable question to add to their training.
And you consider the source of the call. You know, does the call come from a principal or an educator? Does the call come from an attorney? Does it come from a family physician? Does it come from the emergency room? I mean, where does the call come
from? I wonder if a dispatcher's training is really to
that
put it more weight on one person.
Do they get paid enough to do that,
We actually, for a change, have quite a bit of business to take care of here at WPR today, and we will go through this in the break and come back with what Melton thought he was going to talk about. Military Order of World Wars in Bradenton say drugs destroy lives, hopes, and aspirations, and families. Well, this is a little bit too ironic. Parents, remember, our child's drug education begins with you at home. A moment of open communication along with a good example could spare your youngster a lifetime of tragedy. This reminder is from Colonel Fred Graves, United States Air Force Medical Corps Service retired at Military Order of World Wars, where they're working towards a safer and drug-free environment for all of us. That's Military Order of World Wars in Bradenton. Alexis Holling Service, it has been a pleasure serving you this past year. The new year is a time of happiness to look forward to the future. However, when tragedy occurs, it can be the saddest of times.
Wow. It certainly is that today.
Yes. So this year, remember to drive defensively, cautiously, and soberly. Make this season a safe time of year. The community awareness message is brought to you by your friends at our Alexis Holling Service, proud to be serving our community. That's Alexis Holling Service at 2421 7th Avenue East in Bradenton. Let's try and get a phone call in before we return to business. You're live on the air.
Hey, good morning there.
Good morning, Lawrence.
August, yes, sir. You know, this really boils my heart. Well, they've got my blood pressure down.
Oh.
But, you know, this these institution for, the sick people.
They don't really have them anymore, Lawrence.
No, well, Reagan dismantled
them. No, it was actually Kennedy, but that's okay.
Well, you think so?
I know so.
Well, why did he say put them on a, is it the drug, Redland? They don't have to be in a...
Well, that came later, but what's your point then?
You said it was Kennedy?
Yes, it was.
Well, let's say it started that and Reagan...
added to it. Made it worse.
Well, all right. So, like I said, you said that that institution where they, what do you call it, DF, what?
DCF.
DCF, okay.
Department of Child and Family.
Yeah, well, before they're backlogged because the institutions, there aren't any to hold the guys.
Yeah, well, then...
And, you know, they should... That five-year-old, that lawyer tried. But see, the system failed us.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is the problem, but Melton has been saying, will this legislature legislate to provide the monies needed to increase the workers to do the job that the four-hour incident situation requires, or will we just drift along and cut some more and say we're doing a good job of financial management? I personally think financial management includes protecting the people and paying for it. And if you don't believe in that, then you can use some kind of government that we really don't need.
I just can't believe Kennedy.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I love John Kennedy.
Well, you know, the media. Why would they?
Why wouldn't they say that? Because
Reagan. Yeah.
Well, Reagan made it worse. So.
Okay. Well, thank you, guys.
Sure enough.
Stay warm.
I will try.
Bye. Lawrence, we have another caller standing by.
Okay.
Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Ken.
Hey, I heard it mentioned that. Quite a few years ago, the state, the legislature, and the governor cut funding for mental health, and in fact, they closed mental health hospitals all over the state of Florida. They closed that hospital out east of here.
Like Arcadia, I think it is.
Yeah, exactly. No,
and even here, Manatee Glens was at Jeopardy for a while.
Yeah, and there's one about to be closed out there by Arcadia. So.
Well, you know, there's really a widespread effect on our society here. Not only do we have the tragic death of this child, where this father that obviously needed help, you know, there's no facilities to deal with it. But what about the issue with homeless or with mentally ill people living homeless on the streets? We have Sarasota dealing with this issue now, and there are people that should be in a treatment program. They're living on the street, and they come into contact or conflict with business owners and citizens and law enforcement, and it puts a burden on. Ultimately, on law enforcement, because there's no place for these folks to go for treatment. They get sent to jail. We have a jail overcrowding problem, and we have law enforcement burdened with this problem that really they don't have the capacity to deal with. So it's really when we don't have a network to help these folks, it really affects all of us.
Yes, it does, Ken. Well, the $100 a day fee that we pay for people that are incarcerated doesn't seem to bother people either. The apathy in the society is let's let Joe do it, let somebody else do it, and do we really care? And here we care. We see a five-year-old child being tossed. Our visual references here are extreme, and a father saying, "You are God, therefore I'm going to destroy you." The insanity that's involved in all of this is it boggles the mind and shakes everybody to the core. And every time a subject, two people are sitting over coffee and that subject comes up, I'm sure it makes people cringe at the whole idea of the society letting this happen.
Well,
and Melton here, you've been hearing child and family situations all the time. Now you're citing the right of people to marry, and marry responsibly, I suppose, all at the same time.
Well, they can marry responsibly or irresponsibly. I mean, it's the...
They get to marry.
They get to marry, and that's...
Well, I guess we could say for in the case of most same-sex marriages, they're not going to be marrying because of an unwanted pregnancy.
There you go. The children are safe. More people should have same-sex marriage. Isn't that the answer? Isn't that a conclusion?
I don't know. I mean, I can tell you how we got here pretty easily.
Well, let's start there. I'd like to know where we are, too.
Sure. I mean, I think it's important. I think, and one of the reasons I'm glad you asked me to come on is I think that the press is not accurately portraying the same-sex marriage issue.
What's wrong? What are they doing
in
wrong?
The light? Well, it's simply they're treating it solely as a moral issue, and it's not necessarily a moral issue as much as it is a legal issue. I mean, in the opinion that's written, by the way, the opinion that's written that found that the same-sex marriage statute, which was Article 1, Section 27 of the Florida Constitution, that basically said a legal union is one man and one woman, and the state of Florida is not going to recognize any other union or marriage unless it's one man or one union. The judge that determined that unconstitutional graduated from Florida State, graduated from Harvard. His name's Robert Hinkle. He's a judge in the Northern District, and he was only ruling on specific cases that were in front of him. I mean, we don't have time to talk about the specific cases. But his ruling essentially was that in these circumstances, one where a same-sex couple was seeking a marriage license from the clerk of the court, one where a same-sex partner had lived with the other partner for 25 years, and on the death certificate she was not listed as a spouse, one where a firefighter was seeking to have her partner have the same benefits that she was entitled to should she die in the line of duty or service that a regular spouse would be. Those are the cases that were before Judge Hinkle. And what he said in his opinion is, and I'm going to just read really quickly a brief part of it, the undeniable truth is that the Florida ban on same-sex marriages stems entirely or almost entirely from moral disapproval of the practice. That properly analyzed, the ban must stand or fall on the proposition that the state can enforce that moral disapproval without violating the 14th Amendment. So what he's saying is, look, we can't legislate morality. You can pass laws that are designed to protect, ensure the safety of your people, You can, the state of Florida, you can pass laws that are, that don't violate the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution. But when you pass a law that, whether you think it's moral or not, that violates the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution, the courts aren't going to look at whether you fall on one side of the moral issue or the other. The courts are going to look at whether or not the Constitution is violated. And the first paragraph of Judge Hinkle's order is very well written. And if you give me 2 seconds, I just want
to...
Here's what he writes. He says, "The founders of this nation said in the preamble to the United States Constitution that a goal was to secure the blessings of liberty to themselves and their posterity. Liberty has come more slowly for some than others. It was 1967, nearly 2 centuries after the Constitution was adopted, before the Supreme Court struck down laws prohibiting interracial marriage, thus protecting the liberty of individuals whose chosen life partner was of a different race. Now, nearly 50 years later, the arguments supporting the ban on interracial marriage seem an obvious pretext for racism. It must be hard for those who were not then of age to understand just how sincerely these views were held. When observers look back 50 years from now, the arguments supporting Florida's ban on same-sex marriage, though just as sincerely held, will again seem an obvious pretext for discrimination. Observers who are not of age will wonder just how those views could have been held."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think he could have said it any better than he said it.
I have a couple questions. Go ahead, Henry.
Yeah, this is just a very basic question. You know, to the two people, marriage has an emotional meaning. To a church, it has a meaning. But what does marriage mean to the state, to the government?
Well, the state, when the Constitution and the 14th Amendment provides for equal protection for all people, race, creed, color.
Is it just a contract?
Marriage is more than just a contract. Marriage has been determined by the Supreme Court, by the United States Supreme Court, to be a fundamental right. They determined that way before we had the same-sex issue. They struck down laws in other states. There was a law in one state that if you were delinquent in your child support, you couldn't receive a marriage license. That law was stricken as unconstitutional. There was a law that you couldn't marry a prisoner. That law was stricken as unconstitutional. All of these cases and the lines of these cases that came before the same-sex issue have determined and been determined by various Supreme Courts, not just ones appointed by Clinton or Reagan or, you know, ones that Bush might have appointed, but classically throughout the span of the Supreme Court's rulings on issues involving marriage, the Supreme Court of the United States has defined marriage as a fundamental right. So the question that the courts are dealing with is there a legitimate state interest that prohibits the fundamental right of two people who want to join in a union and have that union recognized by the state of Florida and all the benefits that stem from that union that would prohibit that from occurring? What is the overriding state interest that the state can argue would prevent two people who love and care about each other from formalizing their union, whether they're the same sex, or opposite race?
Shouldn't you have polygamous unions?
My turn.
Okay.
I think this goes to contracts, really, ultimately. And if you're in fact, I long believe that marriage is a contract between two loving or unloving people that make agreements to stay together under whatever circumstances. And Henry just suggested polygamy, other things like that, more than one person, marriage to who. All these questions come into play, but ultimately it comes down to love or no love, a contract. And if you're going to have a contract, what does a contract say?
Well, it's more than just, it would be fine if we lived in the vacuum of there was really no benefit to the contract other than the people who were entering into it. In other words, if the consideration for the contract was just between the two people that were marrying, I would agree with you. But that's not the way that society works. What society does is they recognize the marriage of two people across the board, from everything from health insurance to pension benefits. So when I'm not able to enter into this contract with the person that I've spent 10, 15, 20 years with, because I'm the same sex as that person, and that person's not entitled to inherit, is not entitled to their spousal share, is not entitled to health insurance, is not entitled to even be listed as a spouse on the deceased death certificate, then what the court is saying is, at that point now, you're infringing on a fundamental right.
Okay. Did somebody just turn up the passion meter in this studio?
Well, I think so. I'm a little bit. I'm still.
I mean, I have no moral moral opinion I'm expressing either way. I'm simply saying that what Judge Hinkle is saying and what 18 other federal courts said before him.
Well, the right to a contract, it can still be a right to a contract.
You certainly have the right to contract, and as long as the contract doesn't violate...
What if you contract to marry for X number of years, 10, 20, whatever, and you stipulate that at the end of that time, the marriage is null and void by agreement, all the rights therein?
Well, you almost do that sometimes when you have prenuptials.
There you go.
But that's not addressed, and I don't think that the length or the term of the marriage is a fundamental right that would have anything to do with the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment.
What do you mean by that?
What these courts are saying is the right to marry is a fundamental right. The length of time that you stay married, or whether or not you have children of that marriage, or what you do together in that marriage, or whether you're monogamous or not during that marriage, none of those are fundamental rights.
What's the difference between a right to contract, right to marry? What is the difference?
The right to marry and the right to contract. The right to contract is the right to enter into an agreement, which you have as a right, just as a right to marry. But a fundamental right is a right that's specifically granted to you under the United States Constitution. So, you know, you and I can enter into a contract to do anything we want, so long as what we're not doing doesn't violate any laws.
Right.
You know, and we can enter into a contract to do something that Henry might think is immoral. And we have that right to do it. You and I could enter into a contract to do something that's appalling to Henry.
I wouldn't doubt it.
But it's still a right. And what Judge Hinkle has said, and the 18 federal courts have said without exception before him, is that the right to decide whether to marry or not is a fundamental right. And just because the state of Florida's moral views on it, or 60% plus, because it was a constitutional amendment that passed in 2008, just because a majority of the people don't think it's moral, we're not in the business of legislating morality.
You are, in a way. Here's where I come back to the contract.
And after your comment, we got to get one more of these reads in.
The idea of a contract right and what's stipulated in it is not illegal, and it's not slavery and all of those kinds of things that are impinged through contracts. You basically are saying it's stipulated in the contract, the right to marry is stipulated because of the rights of individuals. So what's the difference? I really still don't hear the difference.
Okay, well, hold up that thought for just a moment, because we must tell you that LTD Enterprises LLC makes this opportunity to remind area drivers that the safe operation of a motor vehicle and the consumption of alcohol do not mix. When you take to the road this new year, take along the 3 C's of safety: caution, courtesy, and common sense. That's from LTD Enterprises LLC, where they are always working to make our area a safer place to live, work, and raise a family. That's your friends at LTD Enterprises LLC at 811 59th Street Northwest in Bradenton, where they care. Also, Select Group Homes Incorporated in Bradenton says drugs destroy lives, hopes, and families. Parents, remember your child's drug education begins with you at home. A moment of open communication along with a good example could spare your youngster a lifetime of tragedy. A strong, safe community begins with the involvement of its people. That reminder is from the folks who care at Select Group Homes Incorporated, where they're working towards a safer and drug-free environment for all of us. That's Select Group Homes Incorporated in Bradenton. Call Ruth at 954-649-0700. That's 954-649-0700. And back to Augie and Melton. There is about 2 minutes. The computer will turn the show on that follows us at 10 o'clock.
Okay. The prenup is what you touched upon, which is where you kind of inferred that maybe that does go to the contract issue. And I don't think it's a small one. I think it's going to come up down the pipe. Unfortunately, we've had to, and I think what happened with our state attorney, forget what her name is, who's been spending tons
Attorney
of
General?
Money. Attorney General?
Attorney General.
Pam Bondi. Has been spending tons of state money to resist the rights of people in this situation, which I tend to agree with, but I would argue that there's a contract issue that may be bigger.
Well, the question is there a legitimate state interest in preventing same-sex marriages. There may be very well legitimate state interests in preventing multiple marriages or multiple marriages to a single partner. There may very well be legitimate state interests in that. But when the state and Pam Bondi were arguing this in front of Judge Hinkle, their rationale was, the only rationale they had really that Judge Hinkle considered for banning same-sex marriage was a critical feature of the marriage is the capacity to procreate. And as Judge Hinkle points out, same-sex couples, like opposite-sex couples and single individuals, can adopt. Same-sex couples can't procreate. But neither can many opposite-sex couples.
Exactly.
And neither could people who marry late in life or people who have medical problems. So if we're going to say that marriage is only based on the ability to procreate, then we can't use that as a rationale to deny same-sex marriage.
We want to thank Melton Little of Collins Little Delgado for coming into the studio today. And if you want to hear some of Melton's passion directly on one-on-one or more situations, how will they reach you at your office?
They can call the office at 749-1446. I'm probably not going to debate same-sex marriage with them over the phone, but there is a Tiger Bay meeting coming up, I believe, in the first Thursday in February. And I'll be speaking at that Tiger Bay meeting just on the legal issue, and then there'll be apparently one person from the fundamental right of families.
For professional calls, what will you be taking calls on with that?
Anything that any criminal, family law, personal injury, any legal question they have, they're welcome to call the office. If it's not something we handle directly, we're happy to get them a competent referral.
Phone number again, please.
749-1446.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melton.
We'll be back on Monday with another Morning Edge.
See you then.